Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue, March 5th. We have two items on our agenda. House Bill 2374. We will not have the public hearing today. We are carrying over House Bill 2374 to our next meeting. That will be Thursday. I'm opening a public hearing on House Bill 2130. We have several people signed up to testify, and first, I would like to hear from LRO. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. So House Bill 2130 has several measures scheduled to sunset, and so I'll talk about them separately. I also put out a sheet, a sort of spreadsheet, so that people can follow along. The column on the left-hand side that says bill and section, that's referring to the section in the bill, so that the sort of shorthand in the bill can be interpreted. So section one, so these are bills that, or these are current measures in statute that either are scheduled explicitly to sunset or one of them has an implicit sunset. And so section one deals with tax expenditure in the expenditure report. That's the third column, 2.049, and that exempts golf courses that are used for sewage discharge. If a nonprofit is operating the golf course on municipal land. And so it's currently in statute, scheduled to sunset July 1st, 2021. And in the bill, the proposed sunset is moved to 2027. Section two exempts real and personal property. Again, it is already in statute. But scheduled to 20 personal property and equipment and machinery of a food processor. And that is scheduled to sunset a little bit earlier. And so the sunset is moved out 6 years to July 1st of 2026.
And I have a question before you move on to the next section. Mm-hmm. We have had discussion in this committee and public hearing on some stuff that overlaps with this. Yeah. Can you remind us of that?
Yeah, so this, thank you, Chair. So this is not, this food processing equipment is not farm equipment. So this, when I was reading the bill and statute,
unknown color.
It refers to things like canning, drying, freezing, and uses that term prior to the first point of sale for human consumption. So these are presumably companies that prepare and package food and not farms. These DOR classifications of the Department of Revenue might be able to talk more explicitly about those distinctions.
In a prior bill, we did hear reference to activities that were prior to the first sale.
Yeah.
And water rinsing, for example, was one of those activities.
Yes. So
do we have some more work to do to make sure that the statutes aren't conflicting or overlapping?
I will check into that. And as was mentioned in the prior public hearing when individuals were testifying that food processing wasn't exempt, they were testified that the food processing equipment wasn't exempt under that statute that was being, that bill that was being considered in that statute. This is a different statute.
And it is exempt here.
And it is exempt, and it is currently up for sunset. And the proposal is that it's moved.
Okay, thank you. Representative Marsh.
Thank you, Chair. Can you tell us what the policy rationale is for exempting equipment and machinery for food processing?
I actually don't know the intention, but Mark Garst is raising his hand.
Okay.
Department of Revenue, would you like to make a comment?
Sarah Nathanson, members of the committee. Representative Marsh, the stated purpose in the statute is the Legislative Assembly declares the property tax exemption for qualified property machinery and equipment, encourages continued operation and expansion of the food processing industry in the state. So that was the stated purpose by the legislature to support the industry.
Follow up. Can you, do you have, am I missing it? Is there a statement of revenue impact? That probably is in the tax expenditure report, huh?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Marsh, the stated revenue impact in the tax expenditure report for the 17-19 biennium was $6.3 million of loss and $1.3 million of shift. So taxes that would be, would shift over to other taxpayers. And I'd just like to point out that this is a little bit different than the farm machinery and equipment exemption that we had discussed, because this is a temporary exemption. It's for newly acquired property. It lasts 5 years, and then that property goes back onto the roll. The farm equipment exemption, on the other hand, goes on in perpetuity.
Representative Smith-Warner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And because you seem to have the references at hand, Mr. Garst, thank you. So this in particular was passed. If it was 5 years, was this passed in 15? Or maybe Jamie knows?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Smith-Warner, I have here that the year enacted is 2005, but then the legislature has come in and made changes to this program over the years, generally towards, with an eye towards expanding the program. Mm. So in 2015, it was expanded to include grains, bakery products, dairy products,
That's
and eggs. So we've done some work on this relatively recently.
I remember that being brought up to me very vividly from 2015. Thank you. Okay, let's move to the next section.
Okay, and then we have, there's two components which are for nonprofit housing. So sections 3 through 5 in the bill refer to statute that has an implicit sunset, and that means that there's no explicit date in statute, and so it is up for sunset based on that the fact that it was enacted in 2015. And so sections 3 through 5, land owned by a nonprofit for purpose of building low-income housing for sale. And then the next two components are conforming language to match up with that. The proposal is to move the deadline for filing to July 1st, 2025. And then in section 6 through 8, this is property that is exempt for low-income rental housing, and also property that's held for low-income rental housing. So the three sections are related to the fact that some of the property that is in statute that's exempt for this is being developed. So there's allowances for periods of time to be developed for low-income housing for rent, and then the next two sections deal with sections 9 and 10 deal with if the builder and developer don't perform, then how the exemption would be undone and the allowances made for if there were circumstances outside of their control. Okay, and moving on, section 11 exempts cargo containers, and moving the sunset out from July 2020 to July 2026. And lastly, section 12, historic property, is currently exempt as well and up for sunset in 2020.
Thank you. Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I went back to read section 11 because cargo containers are now the cool new living accommodations. And when does the classification change from a cargo container to a living? I mean, we don't define that. So I think
that is a really good question that I can get back to you on.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions for LRO before we take public testimony?
I have one more. I have one, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On that first one, section one about the that golf course exemption, do we have numbers on how much that is used or perhaps by how many filers?
Probably once.
Do you have any information on that?
I have that the revenue impact from the tax expenditure report is zero. So I can look into it, but it seems relatively small.
Thank you. I have three people signed up to testify. First, I'd like to hear from John Van Lanningham and Allison McIntosh.
I thought he retired. Every year he says he's retiring, then he comes back.
Good morning, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. My name is John Van Lanningham. I work as a lawyer in Eugene for Oregon Law Center / Lane County Legal Aid. We're here to testify in favor of 307-515, which is sections 6 through 10 of this bill. It's an affordable housing local option property tax exemption. So the impact is to local governments. There is no master list of who's adopted this, but we believe that, well, I know personally, and the chair knows personally, since she was on the Planning Commission with me and Eugene, when Eugene adopted it in 1989, when the statute was first enacted. So Eugene uses it, Springfield now uses it, Deschutes County, we believe, and Bend use it, and somebody else, Wilsonville, use this particular exemption. There's another property tax exemption for affordable housing, 307-540, that Portland uses. 307-515 is limited to new construction, so it encourages new development. It's important for the operating expenses to keep the rents low. It can be used by local government, can allow it to be used by a for-profit owner, a developer, as long as the for-profit entity passes through the property tax savings to the, in the lowered rents. This is proposed for a 6-year extension. We would love a 10-year extension. We'll be happy with the 6-year extension. We would note that this exemption was previously extended in 2010 to 2020. If you look at the, it was actually extended by 6 months in the 2018 session because Allison and I were running around like chickens with our heads cut off trying to get it moved to July 1 instead of January 1. But the previous extension was for 10 years. I'd be happy to answer questions. Again, it's a local option. Just local governments get to choose to do this. And it's limited to house new construction housing for people at 60% of AMI or below.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Finley.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Do you know, is this a proportional exemption? Is this a total exemption?
Chair Nathanson, Representative Finley, it's proportional. No, it's a mix of both. If the approving bodies get to 50% of the tax rate, it's 100% exemption. If they don't, then it's proportional. Did that make sense? So in Eugene, for example, to get above 50% of the tax rate approval bodies, it's the city council plus the school district. Those are the two main taxing bodies locally. So the statute says that if you get above 50%, to get to 51% approval, then the exemption is 100% of the tax. If you don't get up to that level, it's like if you got to 45%, then it would be a 40%, 5% exemption of the property tax. Yes.
So, and I guess as the thing that concerns me is one is that the impact on public safety components that, and if they're fully exempted, they're not contributing to the public safety issue. So I guess I just have a concern with that. If they get 100% tax exemption, then the entire unit does not pay any property taxes. It doesn't contribute to the public safety component. It doesn't contribute to the school system.
So, Chair Nathanson, Representative Finley, you're right. That's a policy question for you, not for me.
I understand that, so thank you.
I would note that in order to get to 51%, it usually involves a school district. So I have made this presentation to the Eugene School District, which support it. That also happened in Springfield with the Springfield School District supporting it. And I think school districts view this as a way to provide housing for the children in their school system. And if they're not, the kids are not housed, they have a hard time learning. So the school districts typically see the benefit of promoting affordable housing.
So, thank you.
Chair Nathanson, Vice Chair Finley, Vice Chair Marsh, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Allison McIntosh, and I'm here today to testify regarding HB 2130 on behalf of the Oregon Housing Alliance. As John noted, included in the bill is an extension of a local option property tax exemption related to affordable housing. The Housing Alliance is a coalition of 90 organizations from all parts of the state, and we believe that all Oregonians need a safe, stable, and affordable place to call home. As you know, we simply don't have enough affordable homes for people who need them today. People are struggling with homelessness, housing instability, rent burdens, and to both pay rent and put food on the table. As John noted, the legislature has authorized several property tax exemptions for affordable housing, including the one included in this bill under ORS 3075-17. Local option property tax exemptions are one tool local jurisdictions can use to help incentivize and help make affordable housing developments financially viable in their communities. Property tax exemptions are critical for several reasons. They recognize the importance of affordable housing to our communities and provide ongoing financial subsidy to the project. To your point, Vice Chair Finley, as John noted, affordable housing plays a really vital role in helping kids stay stable in their communities and show up to schools ready to learn. In the Portland metro area, we have also had a number of conversations with public safety entities. I'm sure those conversations are happening elsewhere as well, where our firefighters, our police officers, our EMTs have really become frontline responders to help people experiencing homelessness when they have nowhere else to go. And they have expressed strong support for more affordable housing in our communities so that they don't have to play that role, which they may not be accustomed to playing or and are not housing providers, right? They don't necessarily have the skills necessary to help people get off the streets and move into housing. Without property tax exemptions, local affordable housing developers would need significant additional resources to build the affordable housing and serve members of our community. As John noted, Wilsonville, Springfield, Eugene, and Bend utilize this local option property tax exemption. Also, I think the last point that I would like to make, we just want to make sure that the committee is aware that there is another bill, Senate Bill 737, which extends the sunset on this local option property tax exemption, and it extends the sunset from July 1, 2020 to July 1, 2030, a 10-year period rather than the six-year one in this bill. That bill, Senate Bill 737, was approved by the Senate Human Services Policy Committee last week and does have a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. So, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Questions? Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I have a broader question, and I apologize because I think it's more work for LRO. Looking through these and having heard a series of bills and hearing that there's ones over in the Senate side as well, could we get a kind of an overall on affordable housing, low-income housing, can we kind of get a chart of here's all the tax policy that we have now, whether it's exemptions, allowable? Do we already have that somehow? And I would say for this kind of housing and for agriculture as well, because I'm also struck by the variety of ways in which the personal property is and isn't exempted, and whether it's farm equipment, and when it comes to processing, and all of these different things. So on those two topics, that are before us today, and it may be easy to kind of put together out of what we already have out of the tax expenditures, and I'm not as good at flipping the pages, but could I request something like that to help us in our decision making?
Certainly, and I'd like to restate something that came out in the discussion this morning, because I'd like to emphasize it, but if there's anything about the way I say it that's wrong, I'd like someone to correct it. When Mr. Van Lanningham was pointing out that it takes 51% of the jurisdictions to be in agreement to have the full tax break, I think it's important to note that it means that they have agreed, they each independently have determined for their own local policies, this is an important thing to do, I think it's also important to emphasize this isn't a mandate. This isn't a statewide exemption. This is merely allowing a local government to have that policy discussion in their community with their own citizens, with their voters. So this is merely enabling legislation, enabling local governments to make these determinations. There's nothing that says that every place has to do it or must do it. And apparently, there are very few local governments. If you look at the list of all of the incorporated cities there are, a very, very small percentage of them are taking advantage of this, it appears. So we might hear that information in later testimony. Yes, Representative Marsh.
I agree with this property tax exemption. I hope that we will forward it. I think that we will. It seems like a good encouragement. But I do find something a little unsettling about a school district being able to help comprise the 51% votes, and school districts are essentially made whole if the property taxes shifted away from local governments. I mean, there's what's there to lose from a school district's point of view, except they get more kids. So it does, that doesn't actually, that feels awkward to me. And I don't know if there's any way to involve other taxing districts instead of a school district, which, you know, has something in the game here.
Any other comments or questions for this panel? Yes, Representative Finley.
The last comment I have is I think that, and I appreciate your 51% comment, and I believe that, but, you know, I've said last year and I say again that we should not be writing checks on local units, that the local units need to tell us that they want to do something, we can help them enable that. I mean, it would be nice if we had letters of support from the taxing districts that says, you know, we're going to be doing this, and we would like to have your help in figuring out how we can pull this off. So. You know, when we do a revenue impact statement, we show that there's no impact to our revenue because it's a state revenue, but it's a huge impact to local revenue and the public safety component of it. So I think we need to be very cautious on when we do stuff that without knowing that we're doing what the local units would like us to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
One more comment?
Yes. Thank you. Not specific to this, but I think this does... This conversation reinforces what we've talked about, which is the need to really take a deep dive into the property tax exemptions. I mean, this is just one of 100.
Yep, absolutely.
Thank you. Next, we'll hear from Wendy Johnson.
And members of the committee. Wendy Johnson here on behalf of the League of Oregon Cities. I really appreciate Jamie's chart. I wish I would have had it yesterday as I was trying to figure out this bill because it does have 6 exemptions. So I was struggling with which box to check because some of these exemptions the League supports and some of them we question and think that they should be looked at more. I'll just kind of go through them in order, if that's okay. The first one is the golf course one. I had to struggle to figure out what had happened there. This was a really narrow exemption that was written for Myrtle Creek. Mm-hmm. They had a golf course. It's still owned by Myrtle Creek, the city of Myrtle Creek, which is south of Eugene. The provision provides that the municipality has to own the golf course and that it be leased to a nonprofit in 1997. So that's literally one golf course that is eligible for this. We don't think it's in that situation right now, but I'm trying to figure out if it could eventually go back to a nonprofit. But it's a unique situation because of the water and how it's discharged onto the golf course land. So it's an important water issue for the city and how that property works. But it's less than, you know, $10,000 exemption if it's used, but we don't think it's being used right now. But I'll get back to the committee after I talk to the bookkeeper was what I was told I need to talk to figure that out. But that's the history of that provision. The next section, section 2, is the food processing exemption that would be extended by the bill. There is another bill in this committee sponsored by Representative Smith. It's House Bill 2900 that would also extend that same food processing exemption. And members of the committee will remember then in the 2015 session, that was one that the League did not support because it added a whole bunch more food processing products to the exemption. And our objection to that is that food processing equipment is very much a business exemption, but we think it should be a community discussion. Just because you produce X product, having your machinery and equipment taken off the tax roll and local governments having no control over that was objectionable to the league. In the 2015 session, grains were added, bakery products, dairy products, and eggs. Eggs had been in a different provision, and now they're also in this one. Later, there was a $100,000 initial investment requirement added. That at least made it so it wasn't just replacing your regular equipment, which was incredibly objectionable if the business is already there. This can be used as an incentive, and I handle economic development for the league as well, and so we do want to provide an incentive, but you can't provide an incentive if it's just automatically done. And so we would like to see this exemption looked at to see if we could put some sideboards on to make it a local option, require some sort of job or investment requirement, expansion, something that makes it truly an economic development tool rather than just a straight exemption because of what product you produce. but initially, sorry, I'm losing my voice. Initially, this exemption was written to cover fruits and vegetables during a time of what I understand economic crisis for that industry. And now that industry is actually thriving. So it points to your comments earlier of we need to look at these exemptions from time to time because circumstances change. Mark Garst noted that this exemption was, what was it, $6.3 million. That was in 17-19 biennium. The 19-21 biennium is looking at $8.8 million. So this exemption is going to continue to grow exponentially, and that causes us concern because my understanding is that there are not a lot of these properties, but they're concentrated in certain areas, so it's a big hit on the local government where they're located. So I think it needs further review. The next set of exemptions is the nonprofit housing. It's sections 3 through 5. We believe this is used primarily by Habitat because this is purchasing the land or keeping it, providing an exemption for the land so that you can provide a more affordable house on that property. And so the expenditure report notes that there are 52 properties in several counties, 8 counties that use this one. And we hope this one will be used more in the future because it's the type of property tax exemption that really does help our communities all over the state. So we would support that one. Right now, that one's only costing $200,000 a year. It's for a limited time, and it's just on the land. So we would support continuing that one. Then moving on to sections 6 through 10, the public testimony you just heard, we would support that as well. It is in few cities that this exemption is being done. The local community, the city needs to adopt this an ordinance to provide the rules for this. It is a local option, so it's the bigger communities that have worked on this and taken the time because it is complicated to write. What we like about this one, it is a local option. You do have to get the, it'll just be what the city puts in as the exemption unless they do get buy-in. But there's also, you'll see in section 6 of the bill, on lines 21 and 22 that, lines 18 and 19, that you can add additional criteria to qualify for this exemption. So it's not, there's some requirements on, income and how much you rent for and such, but the community can add additional criteria. And so we particularly like those types of exemptions so that can be tailored to meet the needs of the community. So we don't have the public safety or water issues or whatever it is that you can tailor this type of exemption. Let's see. And this one is $2.1 million a year, so it is it's a modest exemption for an important housing crisis in our state. And the communities that were mentioned that use it, Bend and Eugene and Wilsonville and Springfield, they're all really facing crisis. And this is an affordable way for the city to partner with for businesses and nonprofits to provide it. It's much cheaper than other ways to get affordable housing, so we would support that. But as you've already also heard, this same exemption is in another bill, and so that would be a fine way to do it. Then section 11 is the cargo containers. And looking at that one, it looks like the history is that there's case law that says you can't tax the cargo containers that are owned by a foreign company. And so we don't want to be at a competitive disadvantage to be taxing the local container for the local cargo containers, particularly at the Port of Morro and the Port of Portland and Terminal 6 and such. You don't, it was a competitive disadvantage to be taxing those properties in Oregon. So that's why it originally passed. Because Terminal 6 was shut down, there was there wasn't a revenue impact for a while, but now it's when it's back open. And so I appreciate the comment of we don't want to make sure we write cargo container properly, but that's the economic development piece that we need to keep in mind of why this was done, that we don't want to be at a competitive disadvantage. So we would support continuing that one. Although I would really like to make sure that we hear from the ports that this is still necessary, but that was our understanding of why it was needed and why it should continue. And then lastly, the historic property is section 12 of the bill. This one gives me a bit of pause, and I think it's important to look at it again. It's a $31.8 million exemption. It surprised me how big that one was. But it's exempting historic property, which often is commercial property. But the analysis that is in the expenditure report and just what I've heard anecdotally is that these are often really old but important buildings that you can get a huge return on investment if you're able to provide an exemption for this historic property to get it renovated. And that's what the details of the exemption really go into, that you're not just getting the exemption, you have to renovate and improve the property to get the exemption to continue. So there's a nexus there of economic development that shows that giving that property tax break allows them to get the work done to renovate the buildings. It was revised. Originally, it was a 10-year or a 15-year, I think, and they lowered it a few years ago, so it's a 10-year. And then the local decision makers have to extend it for another 10-year if it's asked for. But again, you still have to continue renovating. But I have not spent enough time delving into the details here. I think it's worth looking at again. But this is both, and it can be reused for residential, I believe. So it's both commercial and residential. But it is a large one. It's it goes back to the 60s from a federal program to get on the historic registry. But in Oregon, the Parks and Rec Department there, it's called SHPO, their state historic
preservation officer,
has to review it as well. And so this is a more complicated one because of that process, but there is a local option component to get the extension. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In section 12 on the historic property, is there an opt-in section, or is it if you have a property that was on the historic register and 1994, it automatically gets it, or does the local taxing districts have to approve that?
I
have part two.
Chair Nathanson, Representative Finley, I think, and maybe the department can clarify, I believe it's a 10-year, and then you can apply for a second 10-year, and that second is a local option, I think is how it works.
The part two, thank you, Madam Chair, the part two is there a requirement that you're actually doing something with the property? Because some of these properties are purchased and they just sit.
Representative Finley, I believe the way this works is that there is a callback if you don't can do the renovation. And so there is a requirement to get that exemption, but I can look into it further.
Okay, thank you.
Additional questions, Ms. Johnson? Thank you. Some of the questions that have come up, I would appreciate LRO providing a response to the committee, as well as anyone who provided individual testimony. There are some of these that will require additional work and discussion for the committee. I anticipate we will come back to this. We don't have a date, but we will come back to this one. Anything else? Thank you. I'm closing the public hearing now on House Bill 2130. There is no other business. We're adjourned.